there's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling, everything's going my way.
It all began on the 31st of March 1943, when Alfred Drake, as Curly McLean, moseyed onto the stage of the St. James's Theatre in New York and sang that song. It was far from being just another opening, another show. There were no chorus girls, there was no high-strutting, high-kicking opening number. Just an open stage, an old woman churning butter, and a cowboy and his song. The Theatre Guild's new musical, Oklahoma, subverted everyone's expectations. In Oklahoma, the birth of a brand new state represented a new age in musical theatre. For its creators, Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein II, it was the start of a partnership that would produce some of the biggest blockbusters in the history of musical theatre. It wasn't quite the start of their songwriting career. That had begun in 1919, when they wrote a song together entitled Only Room for One More. By Oklahoma, even one more was out of the question. It was a sellout.
All the cattle are standing like statues. All the cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eye. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day.
Hugh Jackman taking the stage of the National Theatre in London in 1998. The show was then 55 years old, but might have been written the week before. It's said that during the rehearsal period for that now classic Trevenham production, no one was allowed to sing for the first couple of weeks. None had his cast speak Hammerstein's song lyrics, so as to establish how the songs were a seamless extension of the dialogue. We've all grown to love those songs, and what songs they are, but their context within the fabric of Hammerstein's book is what really brings them to life. Everybody's quick to point at Hammerstein's sentimentality as a lyricist. Too few acknowledge his grit as a dramatist, or his wry, ironic wit.
Orchard is dead. Orchard Fry is dead. His friends will weep and wail for miles around.
Miles around.
The daisies in the dell will give out a different smell, because Orchard is underneath the ground.
Orchard is dead. A candle lights his head. He's laying in a coffin made of wood.
Wood!
And folks are feeling sad, 'cause they used to treat him bad, and now they know their friend has gone for good.
Good.
Orchard is dead. A candle.
Like he's asleep. It's a shame that he won't keep, but it's summer and we're running out of us.
Humour at the dark heart of Oklahoma. Curly almost persuading the menacing Judd Fry that he'd be better off, certainly more popular, if he was dead. It's a brilliant scene which points up Judd's loneliness and establishes his role as the outsider, and how much more unsettling is the villain we can pity. Even the romance in Oklahoma has an edge. Travelling salesman Ali Hakim finds himself looking down the barrel of a shotgun when he tries to woo Ado Annie away from Will Parker. She can't say no, but her father has other ideas. And when will Laurie Williams let on she's crazy about Curly? Their idea of foreplay is written entirely in negatives, the conditional love song.
Don't.
Say we're in love. Heaven forbid. That classic number was a first. It's true that in Kern and Hammerstein's Showboat, Magnolia and Gaylord could only make believe they were in love. But here the pretense went further. Hammerstein's lyric is a catalogue of don'ts. It says no, but Roger's melody says yes, yes, yes. It's an inverted love song, and as if to prove the point, Roger's even inverts the melody for the middle eight. Now that's what I call a release. But in their next show, The Magnificent Carousel, the conditional love song would take a deeper and darker turn. The courtship of mill worker Julie Jordan and carousel barker Billy Bigelow is built upon one word, if. In one of the greatest book scenes ever to grace a musical, we move from tentative advance to first kiss in just 10 magical minutes. If I Loved You is always only a heartbeat away from How I Loved You.
If I loved you, time and again I would try to say.
I Loved You from Carousel. And once again, it's the unbearable ache of the melody that tells you how Billy really feels about Julie and she about him. Neither really knows how to commit at this stage, but they do almost by default because their troubled relationship is inevitable. At the heart of a musical which dares to confront the spectre of domestic violence head-on, Rodgers and Hammerstein show us who Billy Bigelow really is, or could be. His famous soliloquy is a whole musical in one song, one scene. For the better part of 10 minutes, the ne'er-do-well Billy is revealed as a frightened little boy, overwhelmed at the idea of becoming a father. And we're moved, very moved, because briefly there's hope that this child might just turn his sorry life around. He sings proudly of My Boy Bill, but what if it's a girl? All at once, sentimentality is turned to high art. Through Hammerstein, Billy says what he feels. Through Rodgers, his emotions become ours.
My little girl, pink and white as peaches and cream is she. My little girl is half again as bright as girls are meant to be. Dozens of boys pursue her, many a likely lad does what he can to woo her from her faithful dad. She has a few pink and white young fellers of two or three. But my little girl gets hungry every night, and she comes home to me. I gotta get ready before she comes. I gotta make certain that she won't be dragged up in slums with a lot of bums like me. She's gotta be sheltered and fed and dressed in the best that money can buy. I never knew how to get money, but I'll try, by God, I'll try. I'll go out and make it or steal it or take it.
Great John Raitt soliloquizing in the original Broadway production of Carousel. And if a Broadway score has ever produced anything better than that, then I've yet to hear it. Ultimately, Carousel is about love beyond reason. As if we didn't know already, love is blind, and when Julie Jordan sings the words, "Common sense may tell you that the ending will be sad," she knows that hers is not to reason why she doesn't break and run away, to quote Hammerstein's most candid lyric. Because what's the use of wondering is a question that doesn't require an answer. It's also the most poignant ballad Rodgers and Hammerstein ever wrote.
Common sense may tell you that the ending will be sad, and now's the time to break and run away. Of wondering if the ending will be sad. He's your feller and you love him. There's nothing more to say. Something made him the way that he is, whether he's false or true. Things that are his, one of those things is you. So when he wants your kisses, you will give them to the lad, and anywhere he leads you, you will. His girl and he's your feller, and all
and all the rest is talk. That's what I call plain speaking. Hammerstein knew that his candid payoff would nail the home truth of that song. And as for the melody, well, Stephen Sondheim, no less, has acknowledged that for all Hammerstein's dramatic instincts, the essence of Carousel's enduring power lies in the ache of Rodgers' score. It was undoubtedly his finest hour. But a bigger hit was to follow. Joshua Logan now joined forces with Hammerstein to create a libretto based on James Michener's Tales of the South Pacific. And every night and twice on matinee days, Mary Martin caused a not insignificant stir by literally washing that man right out of her hair.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his way. I'm gonna wave that man right out of my arms. I'm gonna wave that man right out of my arms. I'm gonna wave that man right out of my arms and send him on his way. Don't try to patch it up, tear it up, tear it up. Wash him out, dry him out, push him out, fly him out. Cancel him and let him go, yay, sister. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his
South
way.
Pacific became only the second musical to win the prestigious Pulitzer Prize for drama. It also swept the board at the Tonys, receiving gongs for all its creators and principal players. The Pulitzer was no doubt prompted by the touchy issue of racism at the core of the drama. Both the romances in South Pacific flounder on account of deep-rooted prejudices. For Nellie Forbush, the American nurse from Little Rock, Arkansas, it's the matter of Emile Debeck's two Polynesian children that jars with her small-town upbringing. For Lieutenant Cable, it isn't just prejudice, but the scary prospect of a mother-in-law called Bloody Mary that prompts him to reject the alluring island girl Liat. And it is he, Cable, in a lethal number barely 2 minutes long, who tells it like it is.
You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are six or seven or eight, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be carefully taught.
The strength of that number, carefully taught, is in its understatement. It's almost an aside. Which could never be said of the score's two great ballads. Some Enchanted Evening is set up with remarkable sleight of hand in a number called Twin Soliloquies, where Rodgers and Hammerstein have Nellie and Emile thinking aloud but unheard by each other. And when enchantment turns to regret, Emile's rapturous aria at what might have been, "This nearly was mine," pushes all our emotional buttons.
One dream in my heart, one love to be living for, one love to be living for, it nearly was mine. Close to my heart, fly away, only to fly as day flies. Still dreaming of paradise. Still saying that paradise once in me was mine.
Ezio Pinza, still dreaming of paradise. This nearly was mine from South Pacific. Culture Clash was again the dramatic hub of Rodgers and Hammerstein's fifth musical together, The King and I. This time the idea was suggested by a performer. Gertrude Lawrence, who Kurt Weill once quipped had the greatest vocal range between C and C sharp, made it known to the composers that she'd be ready and willing to star as Anna Leonowens should they make a musical of Anna and the King of Siam, a 1946 movie based on the novel by Margaret Landon. The idea was well received, and there was even talk of asking Rex Harrison, who'd played the King in the movie, to reprise his role in the musical. In the end, it went to a bald Russian with bags of charisma and an intimidating stare. His name, I need hardly add, was Yul Brynner. The King and I is really a tale of two seemingly irreconcilable cultures. His is barbaric to her. Hers is a puzzlement to him. But the underlying moral of the story is that Anna and the King learn from each other. Lesson one in their special relationship is the polka. And who in a million years could have imagined that this, of all dances, might prove subtly erotic?
We've just been introduced. I do not know you well. But when the music started, something drew me to your side. So many men and girls are in each other's arms. It made me think we might be similarly occupied. Shall we dance on a bright cloud of music? Shall we fly? Shall we dance? Shall we then say goodnight and mean goodbye? Or perchance, when the last little star has left the sky, shall we still be together with our arms about each other? And shall you be my new romance? On the clear understanding that this kind of thing can happen, shall we dance, shall we dance, shall we dance?
Shall we dance from The King and I, and pride for once sits this dance out. Ultimately, it takes the King's chief wife, Lady Tiang, to make Anna understand who the King really is. Something Wonderful is a stonking ballad with a verse of reverent monotonal beauty. Rodgers once said that a great melody implies its own harmony. Here's harmony that implies its own melody.
This is a man who thinks with his heart. His heart is not always wise. This is a man who stumbles and falls. But this is a man who tries. This is a man you'll forgive and forgive. And help and protect as long as you live. He will not always say what you would have him say. But now and then he'll say something wonderful. The thoughtless things he'll do will hurt and worry you. Then all at once he'll do something wonderful. He has a thousand dreams that won't come true. You know that he believes in them, and
Is that the kind of thing that Cole Porter had in mind when he referred to the holiness of Roger's tunes? Well, even before its opening on the 16th of November 1959, the Tills were alive with the sound of music. A $3 million advance for the Broadway show, to say nothing of the film, made this Rodgers and Hammerstein's richest success. It was another good idea, another shrewd choice of subject. Howard Lindsay and Russell Crouse made a strong narrative book of the real-life story of Maria Reiner, her marriage to George von Trapp, and their singing children. The enveloping shadow of Nazism and the family's escape gave the show a tense, dramatic core. And what a turn they provided for their tomboyish heroine. How do you solve a problem like Maria? How do you find the successor to Julie Andrews? With a TV reality show. The smash hit revival at London's Palladium Theatre found Connie Fisher and made her a star.
The hills are alive with the sound of music, with songs they have sung for a thousand years. The hills fill my heart with the sound of music. My heart wants to sing every song it hears.
It's easy to home in on the sound of music's sweetness, its wholesome, knowing charm. It's easy to knock Oscar Hammerstein for his Raindrops on Roses and Whiskers on Kittens, for the lark who is learning to pray. But remember that children are at the heart of this piece. It is they who teach the adults a thing or two. Besides, as I sat in the Palladium listening again to these songs, a winner every single one of them, I realised how much people love them.
I go to the hills when my heart is lonely.
And it's easy to underestimate the ingenuity and brilliance of the children's numbers, Do Re Mi and So Long Farewell, because they appear so effortless. And how many people think that Edelweiss is a genuine Austrian folk song? Well, for the Palladium revival, both of the two additional songs written for the film were incorporated into the show. Hammerstein had died less than a year after the Broadway opening of The Sound of Music, so both songs had music and lyrics by Rodgers. This one is a beauty and kind of sums up their achievement.
Perhaps I had a wicked childhood. Perhaps I had a miserable youth. But somewhere in that wicked, miserable past, there must have been a moment of truth. For here you are standing there loving me. Whether or not you should. So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good.
Something good. Certainly was. And the point is, they didn't do it once, they did it five times. And that's to say nothing of the other Rodgers and Hammerstein shows I'll be featuring in a second Joseph Weinberger podcast. One or two of those didn't do so badly either. Each contains memorable, durable songs. Speaking of which, is there a more universally recognised show tune than this? As another of Rodgers and Hammerstein's anthems, it transcends language, it crosses over borders, and triumphantly makes the summit every time.